Ah, we used to pin them up all around the cottage. I paused. None of those things were there anymore. No Nana, no Grandpa, no cottage. Suddenly my mouth felt very dry. You might not like those things anymore, but that's okay. A lot has changed. We can figure out what we like together, hey? We'll go to the shops and you can pick out anything you want, anything. I let out a nervous laugh and leaned back in my chair. And in a few weeks, you'll get to meet your sister. We don't know her name yet. Maybe you can help me choose it. I would like that a lot. There was nothing. No reaction from him at all. You grew into your ears. I always wondered if you would. I clutched one hand with the other to stop myself turning into a manic, rambling idiot. As Aidan continued to watch the television, I felt as though I were in a dream. Was I really talking to my son? Was this pasty young man really the boy I thought had drowned all those years ago? My head was light, but my heart was heavy with the implications of everything that had happened. I found myself unable to think of anything else to say. Luckily, Dr. Schaefer noticed my distress and came to my rescue. Perhaps we could all go for a quick cup of tea while Aidan has a little rest, then we can talk about what happens next. We would love to draw a little blood from you, Emma, and then we can establish a DNA match to corroborate the DNA test from yesterday. We also need to talk about what happens next. Someone from social services will need to speak to you. I will be able to take him home, won't I? I asked. A fist of ice gripped my heart. It might just take a bit of time, DCI Stevenson added. With Aidan not talking, we've no idea where he's been for the last 10 years and who he's been with. Who? That word hit me like a truck. Who? Who had he been with? What did they want from him? Nausea rose to my throat, threatening to spill out onto the hospital floor, my fingers wrapped around the armrest of the chair as I attempted to compose myself. Where do you suspect he's been? I asked, saying the words slowly and carefully. Both the doctor and the detective glanced across at Aidan and then back to me. I think it's best we talk about that in private, said DCI Stevenson. Chapter 6. Of course, after Aidan's apparent drowning, I suffered from recurring nightmares. There were two images that haunted me as I tossed and twisted myself into the sheets at night. The first was the sight of Aidan's red coat being pulled from the river. It was the image that the press ate up and regurgitated on the front page of every newspaper. Innocence lost. The contrast of a tiny red coat against a murky dark background, mould and dirt on the sleeves. It was a perfect image for selling newspapers. It hinted at a parent's worst fear without being so gratuitous that they couldn't print it. Does anything sell newspapers better than death? Maybe sex can sell more, given the right story, but the death of a child is the very apex of morbid curiosity. In a tower of sex scandals, prostitutes and celebrities, infanticide rules. Tragic, accidental infant death is just underneath the glory of a child's murder. Aidan was reduced to that one image, and it almost erased every preceding memory I had of him. I couldn't think of his cute, tongue-poking-out look of concentration when reading a book without seeing the red anorak dirtied by river mud. I couldn't picture him shimmying up the tree in our garden wearing a Superman cape without the newspaper headlines revolving through my head. The second image was pure imagination, but it was one that I could not shake anyway. It was Aidan, small and pale, floating in the water. Deep under the surface of the river was my child, half-eaten by fish, bloated and rotting. I dreamed of the flow of the ooze as it met the Humber, rushing and gushing and pouring over rocks, between built-up grassy banks, beneath stone bridges, behind houses, chasing and churning to the sea. I saw him washed away from me, washed away from the world. During the investigation, we had search and rescue experts talk about the currents and the places he could have washed up. It was irregular for a body not to resurface from a river. Out at sea, you would expect a body to disappear, but in a river, they tend to be found. That was why DCI Stevenson was assigned the case. It was only when they found Aidan's coat that a kidnapping had been almost completely ruled out. There had been a flood, and during that flood, Aidan had wandered off, presumably towards the river. Not long after his disappearance, they found his coat in the water. End of story. The thread of logic is all there, isn't it? Except this time, the thread of logic was obviously wrong, because that was my child sitting in the hospital bed wearing the same expression you see on children pulled out of a wrecked building after an earthquake, or rescued from a war-torn country. Which was why I knew my nightmares were likely to come back and what they would be about. With Jake by my side, I followed Dr. Schaefer and DCI Stevenson into a small office. Dr. Schaefer sat at a desk, I was offered a chair, and DCI Stevenson shut the door behind us. That disinfectant smell of the hospital had even seeped into this room, and the tiny window behind the desk was shut, trapping us in a heady miasma of sickness. Part of me almost opened my mouth to ask Dr. Schaefer to open the window and let in some fresh air, but I decided not to bother. It would only mean more faffing about, and I was desperate to hear what they had to say. DCI Stevenson moved towards the desk and hovered there. Jake sat on a chair to my left, his fingers drumming against the grey wool of his trousers. I felt small beside them all, despite my distended stomach. Here I was, one pregnant woman amidst a cluster of men. A shock of femininity thrown into a testosterone-filled room. Despite the situation, I found myself straining to stay composed. Self-conscious about breaking down in front of them, I was almost positive that there would be no judgment on their part if I did, but I would only waste more time. I needed to know everything they knew about my son. Dr. Schaefer pushed a file across his desk and then pulled it back before clearing his throat. His head was bent down, looking at the file rather than at me. He seemed tall. He even sat there in the desk chair. With his head bent like that, I could see the way his hair was thinning. I saw the pink of his scalp slightly shining beneath the soft greying hairs. "This is a very difficult case," Dr. Schaefer said. "Without Aidan talking to us, it's difficult to make an assessment." "Just tell me everything you know and what you think it means," I said. I turned to DCI Stevenson. "And I mean everything." Finally, the doctor lifted his head, and I saw that he had composed himself as a professional. He rested his hands on top of the file and linked his fingers together. "Aidan is small for his age, which leads us to think that he has been malnourished. When he was found on the road, he was walking very slowly, with a limp, and was short of breath. His posture is a little crouched when he walks, perhaps to overcompensate for the limp. During our examination, we found that he has underdeveloped calf and thigh muscles, and there is an indication of ankle injuries in the past, though we will need to perform more tests to discover the extent of those injuries. They are healed now. Aidan's teeth are quite crooked, and though I am no expert in that area, I believe that they have not been cared for particularly well, though he may have had a toothbrush. His skin is very pale, and his eyes were particularly sensitive to bright light during testing. It was at this point that the rushing of my blood and the thudding of my heart became far louder than the doctor's voice, and I was afraid that I was about to swoon forward in the chair. I took a deep breath, stroked my stomach, and willed myself to stay conscious. The problem was, I'd already guessed what he was about to say, and I didn't want to hear it. I wanted to stand up on my shaky feet and my swollen ankles and run as fast as I could while 8 months pregnant. I wanted to get out of that place, to even get away from Aidan, as sick as that sounds, and never think of any of this again. But I couldn't. Aidan had been born, he had existed, he was still here, and he had a story deep down inside that deserved to be heard and processed by his mother. "Emma," Jake said quietly. He squeezed my hand. "Are you all right, love?" "Do you need a break?" DCI Stevenson asked. I shook my head. "Go on. I'm fine. Tell me everything you know." Dr. Schaefer smiled then, and it reminded me of the smile proud parents give their nervous children at sports events. But then he glanced down at his file and let out a long, deep sigh. The worst was to come. There is evidence of damage to Aiden's gums, and there are lacerations on his body that are consistent with sexual abuse. I leaned forward and vomited a small amount of clear liquid onto the floor of the doctor's office. Jake stroked my hair away from my forehead and helped me straighten up in the chair. DCI Stevenson quickly mopped up the stick with his handkerchief and dropped it into the waste paper bin. Not to worry, Dr. Schaefer said. I needed a new bin anyway. He forced a smile. I'm so sorry, I said. It's quite all right. I'll take this to one of the nurses, said DCI Stevenson, and I'll get us all some water too. I think we need it. I smiled thinly, grateful to him for pretending that we all needed water, pretending that I wasn't the only one in the room who had lost control of their bodily functions. I'd known it was coming. Of course I had. Little boys aren't taken away for no reason. Not long after the flood, after search and rescue had failed to find Aiden's body, I'd gone through every possible reason for a child's disappearance, from getting lost down a well to being sold into the sex trade. I went over it all. I saw men with mustaches holding my little boy's hand and leading him into murky rooms. I saw money changing hands and lascivious smiles on the faces of obese, predatory men. I pictured the worst, the very worst, and I felt grimy and disgusting for even thinking it. No shower could take those images away. And now, my worst fear had been confirmed. I leaned back in my chair and closed my eyes. Try to stay calm, sweetheart. Jake cooed. Think of the baby. You need to keep your stress levels down. But I was thinking of the baby. The one sat in that hospital room all on his own, watching cartoons. My body ached with helplessness. Whatever I did now, I could never take it away. I could never go back and stop him going to school that day. Never. I could barely breathe. Here we are, said DCI Stevenson, as he passed a water bottle to each of us. I noticed that he gave me mine with the cap unscrewed. I realized why when my hand extended to take the bottle, only to shake so badly that I spilled some of it onto my clothes. I wrapped both of my hands around the plastic bottle and lifted it tentatively to my lips. I had to admit that the cool liquid felt good as it trickled down my throat. DCI Stevenson opened the window behind the desk and a breeze hit the sweat on my forehead. Thank you, I said. I tried my best to settle into my chair, preparing myself for the rest of the information to come from Dr. Schaefer. But it was Jake who broke the silence first. Are you sure? Hearing his voice was a surprise. Apart from asking me if I was all right, he'd remained fairly quiet since arriving at the hospital. I mean, what you're saying is, we won't be sure until Aiden is able to tell us himself, but that is what our examination suggests. Dr. Schaefer's fingers tightened above the paper file until I saw his knuckles whiten. He released his hands and his shoulders relaxed slightly. I closed my eyes, trying not to think about what the examination had involved. I should have been there, holding Aiden's hand as the doctors poked and prodded him. Has he been in any distress? I asked. Has he been crying, screaming, scared? No, Dr. Schaefer said. He's been very calm. He shows some discomfort when touched, but he allowed us to examine him and to wash and clothe him too. We were very gentle and we talked through every single procedure and why we were doing it. You should have waited for me. My hands clenched around the bottle. I should have been there with him. I understand why you feel that way, said DCI Stevenson in the same calm voice I remembered from all those years ago. We asked the doctors to look for evidence on Aiden's body. If we'd waited, some of that evidence would have been destroyed. And what evidence did you find? I snapped. DCI Stevenson pulled at the collar on his shirt. It was a rainy night when we found him. It seems that if there was any trace of Aiden's kidnapper left on him, it was washed away. There was no trace in his saliva, either. I didn't know what to make of that. But then my mind was swimming with so much information, I didn't know what to make of any of this. I took a long drink of water. It was DCI Stevenson's turn to talk. He met my eyes with the patient, steady gaze of a teacher explaining a problem to a child. The medical examination of Aiden's condition and the way he was found all suggest that Aidan has been confined somewhere for the last 10 years. We think it was a small area with limited light. Dr. Schaefer feels the marks on Aidan's ankles suggest he was chained for some time. The urge to be sick rose again, but this time I swallowed it down. Chained. Confined. Kept like an animal in a cage. I'd studied psychology at school. I knew what that did to a child. I knew about the wolf children and the girl raised in a chicken coop. They were feral and traumatized, virtually unable to function, and certainly unable to integrate into society. But that's... Jake rubbed his eyes as if in disbelief. That's evil. Who would do that to a child? That's what we hope to find out, said DCI Stevenson. Because whoever the monster is, he belongs in jail. Chapter 7. When I was a child, I had very different nightmares to the ones that plagued me as an adult. They were filled with narrow, labyrinth-like tunnels. As I walked, I'd follow a small dot of light leading the way. I really wanted to play with that dot of light because it looked appealing, all glowing and orange and sparkling. But as I walked on, the tunnel walls closed in. The bright, glowing light started to dim. I'd become frantic, running for my life, no longer chasing the light, but being chased by some unknown thing. On and on I went, turning one corner, then the next. As the corridor became narrower and the ceiling lower, it squeezed closer until the walls touched my skin. Narrower and narrower it went until I was on my knees, crawling through the dark. I always woke up just before I got stuck. Being confined has been one of my greatest fears for as long as I could remember. It's why I opened the cage for the school guinea pig to escape. It's why I made Dad return the gift of a rabbit in a hutch. It's why I leave the door open a crack when I have to wee in a public toilet. The thought of Aidan, stuck in some tiny room, chained like an animal. It awoke some savage maternal wildness inside me. I wanted to find whoever had done this to him and rip them apart with tooth and claw, like the lioness I knew I could be. The quote goes on about a woman scorned. Scorned. As if the jealousy of a lover could ever compete with the ferocity of a mother. I raked my fingers through my hair in that vomit-scented room and soaked up the rage that I would feed on to get me through the next few weeks. What are you doing to find this man? I asked. We're searching the area where Aidan was found and we're canvassing for eyewitnesses, but this is delicate, Emma, and you know why. We can't do much without the press finding out. We only have to call in an eyewitness from that day and they will know something is going on. You're going to need to prepare yourself for what's coming. I let my head sink into my hands. Had I even felt joy yet? Had I allowed myself to be happy that Aidan was alive? Could I feel happy at this moment? Should I? Bastards, Jake hissed. As if they didn't do enough after the flood, practically sent Emma's parents to an early grave. I need to ring Sonia and Peter, I said. They're Aidan's grandparents, they'll need to see him, especially if this is going to turn into a shit show of a media circus. Stevenson nodded. I think that's a good call. Aidan needs loving parents and grandparents around him now. Though the detective didn't explicitly say it, I knew he was thinking it. He was hoping that Aidan would snap out of his fugue and talk to us. Solving this case would be a priority for the police right now, especially once the media started reporting on it. Beneath my growing baby, my empty stomach cramped. Can I see him again? I asked. Of course. Dr. Schaefer smiled. But first, we should talk about what we need to do to help Aidan get better. This is a highly unusual case for which there is no real precedent. Aidan has been kept away from society for 10 years and will need help integrating. I understand, I said, balling my dress up in my left fist. We feel it would be best to keep Aidan in hospital for a few days for observation. When he was first admitted, we weren't aware of the situation, otherwise we would have kept Aidan in quarantine to prevent him picking up a bug he might not have developed an immunity to. but he has been seen by several nurses and a few visitors and appears to be fine. Still, we'll need to discuss what vaccines he was given before his abduction and whether we need to give him any more before he can go home. I squeezed my dress, hating that my son needed this special treatment at all. Of course. Social services were contacted immediately, and you'll need to have a meeting with them, but I believe Aiden will need therapy. Perhaps also speech therapy to help him begin speaking again, and some physiotherapy for his leg. He'll need to see a dentist too, perhaps a nutritionist.
That's a lot of people fussing over my son. I said, look, I know all of this needs to be done. I want him to get better, and I want him to be able to live a normal life, but all this will be too much for him, don't you think? Dr. Schaefer sighed. I do.
I believe this is going to be a slow adjustment and a slow process. Not everything will happen at once. For one, I believe Aiden will need to see a specialist at York Hospital Physiotherapy Unit, though we will need an X-ray first. He paused. There's going to be a waiting list anyway, and maybe I can help you with his diet to begin with, and we can check on him in a few weeks. And another thing, Aiden has been declared dead. He has no identification, no passport.
I have his birth certificate, I said.
And a death certificate, Dr. Schaefer continued. I'm no expert in these matters, but I know it might be difficult at first. All of Aiden's records show him as deceased, and that will slow the whole process down. But what we'll do is test his eyesight, hearing, and vitals in hospital. Then you can arrange for a dentist, optician, and physiotherapist to see him when the paperwork has come through. I let go of the balled-up material. Thank you. I appreciate it. Now can I see him? I needed a few minutes with him before calling Rob's parents. Perhaps it was selfish. Perhaps it was reasonable. I didn't know at the time, and I didn't care. I didn't dwell on my feelings. I was protecting my son. The last thing he needed was to be bombarded by well-meaning visitors and professionals. I followed Schaefer and Stevenson through the corridor, avoiding the stares from the nurses walking up and down. For the first time, I realized that there were other children on the ward. I tried not to stare into the rooms as we walked along, but through open doors I saw giggling children and fathers making silly faces. There were plaster casts on arms and legs, broken limbs. They were normal reasons for a child coming to hospital. And when they went back to school, they'd get all the signatures and doodles of their friends. They'd have fun stories to tell. And then next door's Doberman chased me over the fence, but I caught my jeans and face-planted. And scars to show off. They would be louder and more boisterous for a while, emboldened by their escape from death. But not my son.
Hey, Aiden.
I kept my voice bright and cheerful as I entered the room. Aiden sat with his back propped up against the headboard. He had a cup of juice in his hand, and he sipped on it slowly. I walked over to the bed, cleared my throat as I moved the chair closer to him, and held back tears. I was determined to avoid thinking about what he had been through. I would not. I could not. I bet you're sick of people bothering you when you're trying to watch cartoons. I let myself really look at him this time. I took it all in. The rich brown of his eyelashes, the boniness of his shoulders, the thick straight hair. They melded with my memories of the dark-haired boy with scrapes on his knees and a grin on his face. Now there was only a neutral, placid expression on his face. Every one of his movements was slow. The turn of his head, blinking, reaching out to the table next to him for his drink. The baby moved inside, kicking her feet. I longed to take Aiden's hand and place it on my bump for him to feel, but I only put my own hand there instead.
That's your little sister saying hello. You see? You have so many people wanting to say hello.
And, you know, I would have come sooner, but I didn't know where you were.
I'm sorry, Aiden. I'm so sorry. I didn't know where you were. I'll never not know again, I promise.
We're going to fix it all, you know.
We're going to mend it together, you and me. We'll be a team again. Like we were when we lived at Nana's house, remember? We fought crime, you and me. You were Superman, obviously. You had the cape. I was just your sidekick. But you made sure we caught the baddies every time. We're going to do that again, I promise. And that was as much as I could say without breaking down. For another 5 minutes, I watched cartoons with my son. I rested my hand on the bed next to him, and although his eyes flickered towards the movement, he didn't flinch away. Still, I didn't try to touch him. I found him oddly self-possessed then. I knew the doctors thought he was in shock, but he didn't seem shocked or afraid. He seemed comfortable in his own skin. He seemed quite at ease, ignoring us all and casting his attention to what mattered the most to him, cartoons. And who could blame him? He'd been hurt by someone. An adult. Why would he want to interact with more adults after that happened to him? I didn't blame him for ignoring us all. It was Jake who broke the spell cast over me in that quiet room. Emma, honey, you need to call them. I nodded my head. What time was it? I hadn't checked the time on my phone for what felt like hours. I'd given Jake my handbag and forgotten all about it. He handed it to me now, after I crossed the room on unsteady legs. I pushed my hair away from my clammy forehead and reached for my phone inside the bag. It was almost 7. We'd been here just under 3 hours. Sonia and Peter would be sitting down to eat their dinner at this time. I pictured them in the back rooms of their B&B. Peter was tall and broad like Rob, boxer's physique, which was something he used to do as a hobby in his youth. Sonia was a slip of a woman, stooped, thin shoulders on top of 2 matchstick legs. Her voluminous blonde bob always made her look a bit like a lollipop. The two of them dressed in Marks and Spencer cashmere sweaters and iron jeans. They were the epitome of a nice, normal countryside couple. The thought of telling them what I needed to say made me lightheaded and nauseated. But I thought of how they had loved Aiden when he came along. We would walk to the B&B after school and Sonia would come running out with a box of licorice all sorts and a comic book. Aiden never really liked licorice and they always got him the wrong comic book. But he was always grateful and laughed at Peter's bad jokes. They took him to the farms outside the village to see the lambs, and to the rural shows when they came around every year. They held his little hand and pointed out all the sights for him to see. They bought him candy floss and little trinkets for him to keep. I stepped out of the room and found a quiet space to call. When I placed the phone against my ear, I started to cry.
Bishop Town Bed and Breakfast!
Sonia answered.
Sonia, it's Emma.
Emma, dear, you sound terrible. She sucked in a breath.
Is it about Aiden?
Yeah. There was a sob on the other end of the line.
Peter, it's Emma, it's about Aiden.
I imagined him hurrying through to their living space in his woolen socks. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath.
Sonia, it isn't what you think. They haven't found a body. They found Aiden, but he's alive.
There was a silence. Eventually I heard Rob's dad in the background.
Sonia? What's she saying? Sonia, tell me.
He's alive?
He's alive, and he's at St. Michael's Hospital.
I can't explain much over the phone. It's difficult to. You just need to see him, and he needs to see you.
I decided to warn them face-to-face rather than over the phone.
And, well, you need to call Rob. He needs to come too. Okay. Are you sure?
I'm sure, Sonia.
Oh my, that's... I'll have to go. I'll see you when you get here.
I lifted the phone away from my ear and ended the call, drawing in my own deep breath. I leaned against the wall of the silent waiting room and closed my eyes for a second.
Mrs. Price Hewitt... My eyes opened and my shoulders slumped. Dr. Schaefer stood in the doorway with his hands deep in his coat pockets. If you have a few moments, it might be a good time to draw some blood. It's important to run the tests as soon as we can.
Of course, I said.
How are you feeling? Are you up to this?
He asked, meaning the blood draw.
As I followed him out of the waiting room, I mulled that question over, and no matter how many times I thought about it, I still didn't have an answer. Chapter 8. I got a cup of tea, a sandwich, and yet more explanations of what was to come. There were more tests to be done, x-rays, scans, psychological assessments. A therapist would see him soon. There might have to be an investigation into our home to check it was suitable. It was all too much. Sonia and Peter were in tears at the sight of him, but Sonia was the first to turn to me and nod. They knew. They saw Rob in him just as I had. The phlebotomist took my blood, but it wasn't necessary. Not to me. The boy in that room was Aidan, and we all knew it. I had almost fallen asleep when the social worker turned up to talk to me. Jake ended up doing most of the talking. By that point, little seemed to matter to me except for Aidan, and certainly not a cross-examination about me as a mother. By 10 p.m, my head was spinning, but the social worker appeared happy with the interview and informed us that she would pop round to the house when Aidan had been discharged from the hospital. Reluctantly, I left Aidan's room to let him rest and slipped away from the others, picking up a bottle of water. Outside the hospital, I sat down on an uncomfortable stone bench and let a pattering of drizzle land on my hair. It would frizz, but I didn't care. "I've called Rob." I flinched. Sonia moved like a panther. Her voice cut through my own suffocating thoughts, jarring me back to reality. "Thanks." She sat down next to me, leaving adequate space between us for another person. She wrapped her arms around her body. "It's really him. I didn't know whether to rejoice or cry for what he's been through." "I know the feeling." "I bet you do." She turned towards me. "I want to call it a blessing, but I can't. The way he sits there, barely moving." She covers her mouth with her hand. "He was never this quiet. Peter used to call him Chatterbox. He'd tell us all about the spiders and worms he'd collected from the garden, a real boy's boy." I nodded. "I remember." She shuffled uncomfortably. "Rob will be here in the morning. He's arranged a leave of absence." "That's good. Aidan is going to need him. He'll need all of us." Sonia nodded and bit into her thumbnail. "Where is Aidan going to stay when he leaves the hospital?" Surprised, I turned to face her. "He'll be staying with me. I'm his mother." Sonia lifted a hand like she was trying to placate me. "Oh, I know, it's just... well, you don't live in your parents' home anymore. I wondered if maybe he'd want to stay somewhere he already knew, like the B&B. I let out a cold, hard laugh. "Absolutely not. Aidan is my son and he's coming home with me." Her lips tightened into a thin line. "Okay. As long as that's what's best for Aidan, he's all I care about now, all I'm thinking about." "And I'm not." My chin lifted as I regarded her through the dim glow of the hospital windows around us. "Now, Emma, I never said that. It's just that I know you have the baby coming soon, and Aidan doesn't know Jake at all, does he? He knows us, though. He knows Rob. He knows the B&B. But that wasn't where he grew up," I said. I hated that some of what she was saying made sense. I pushed that thought away. Aidan needed me more than he needed Rob, Sonia, and Peter. "He grew up with me more than anyone else. I was his constant before he..." I struggled to compose myself. "I know I'm going through some changes at the moment, but I was the one to bring him up, and it won't matter where we live or who lives with me. I'm his mother, and he's coming home with me." I paused to brush away a stray tear. "If that was Rob in there, would you let anyone else take him home?" Sonia sighed. "No, I wouldn't. You're right." But there was a note of disagreement in her voice. She didn't believe I was right at all. But I didn't know why. I fell asleep in the chair in Aidan's hospital room that night. Managing that was a feat in itself, given the uncomfortable nature of the chair and the uncomfortable nature of my pregnancy. But the body takes what it wants, and I wanted sleep. It was Dr. Schaefer who woke me after 11 p.m. Jake slipped my coat over my arms and they ushered me out. Aiden needed rest. It had been a long day for him. While I had slept, Aiden had sat up awake, either watching me or watching television. I thought I would feel more human after a night in my own bed, a hot shower and some real food, not hospital canteen food. But that Friday morning I woke still feeling half-conscious, like I was living in a dream world. It was only the occasional kick from Bump that reminded me everything was real. Aiden really was alive, and he really had been captured and kept like a performing bear. Every time I thought about it, the cereal churned in my stomach. Jake took the day off school and drove me to the hospital. It was a day of x-rays and scans. I saw Aiden standing up for the first time, and my breath caught when I realized just how short he was. There was a stiffness to the way he walked, like he didn't quite know what to do with his legs. I made a joke about how I walked funny because of the bump, but Aiden didn't laugh. I even waddled as I walked, pretending I was far bigger than I actually was. "We'd like to take a better look at Aiden's ankle today," said Dr. Schaefer. "We'd like to check some of his other bones, too, so we'll be sending him off for some x-rays. Then we'll draw a little blood, and afterwards a child psychologist is coming to spend time with him." A prickling sensation worked its way over my skin. "I don't want him to be a study. He's not some feral child brought up by wolves. He's my son. Not a name in a paper." "I completely understand," said Dr. Schaefer, tilting his head down to show gravitas. "But I do think that the psychologist will help. Aiden is going to need some therapy." That I couldn't argue with. "Can I be with him during the x-rays?" I asked. But before I could answer, the door to the room burst open, and a small surprised breath left my body. I was vaguely aware of Jake turning his head towards me with a frown on his face. But mostly, I stood staring at the man who'd entered. It had been almost 8 years since I'd last seen Rob. We'd spoken around the time Aiden was declared legally dead, but apart from that, we rarely made contact with each other. Though that didn't stop Sonia giving me updates of his progression through the army whenever I bumped into her. He had joined shortly after Aiden's apparent drowning in the ooze. Rob stopped dead just inside the door. His gaze was focused entirely on Aiden, and I saw a sheen of moisture over his eyes, turning them to glass. He knew, like I had, like Sonia had. He knew this was his son. "Aiden," he whispered. I managed to control my breathing, but my heart raced. Rob had always been a large man, and the army had beefed him up even more than the last time I'd seen him, so that he filled the doorway with his bulk. He wore boots, jeans, and a black leather jacket, well worn and frayed at the edges. His brown hair was shorter than ever, and his deep chestnut brown eyes were all Aiden. "It's him, Rob," I said. "It's really him." My ex-lover's eyes finally moved from our son to me, and a shiver worked its way down my spine. In that moment, I knew he understood how I'd felt as I'd walked into this very same room and seen my son back from the dead, and the intensity of that experience seemed to hit us both. When Rob's knees began to buckle, I rushed forward and wrapped my arms around his shoulders. It wasn't anything I thought about. In that moment, I forgot all about Jake, who no doubt felt useless standing back watching his wife embrace another man. The problem was, Jake didn't know what I was feeling as well as Rob did, and it was Rob's arms I needed around me. Before I knew it, I was crying on Rob's shoulder, and he was crying on mine, and for the most fleeting of instants, I almost felt as though I had a family again. "Mum told me everything before I came," he said as he pulled back. I wiped the tears from my eyes and cleared my throat. "Everything?" He nodded. "I'm gonna tear that monster apart when I find him." I glanced nervously back to Aiden. "Not here, Rob," I kept a sharp warning tone in my voice. He ran his hands over his face. "You're right." Aiden had seen enough violence. We didn't need to add to it with our words. Rob bent low and opened his arms towards his son, who was hanging back next to Dr. Schaefer on the other side of the room. "Hey, mate. How are you doing? Remember me?" You don't have to say anything, pal. It's okay. I'm your dad. Okay? Sorry I wasn't here yesterday. Hey, did you know I fly helicopters now? Remember that helicopter I got for you? It got stuck in Mum's hair and then we weren't allowed to play with it inside again, remember? He let out a little laugh at the memory. I remembered it well. Its propellers had taken a chunk out of my hair. I shook my head a little and laughed. I'd been so mad with them both. But they looked at me with the same puppy dog expression and my heart had melted. We should take Aidan to get his x-ray, said Dr. Schaefer, jolting me back to the present. Sure, Rob said. He turned to Aidan. Gotta get you patched up, kid. You'll be right as rain soon. Then maybe I can get you another helicopter, eh? He glanced across at me and then cupped his mouth with his hand, conspiratorially. We'll keep it away from Mum this time, though. I wanted Aidan to laugh or smile or nod, but there was nothing. His features were completely blank, like a doll's expression. I wrapped my arms around my body, then followed the doctor and Aidan into the corridor. Sonia and Peter were waiting outside and gave Aidan a limp little wave as he passed them by. Aidan didn't seem to notice. Sonia's hand flew up to her mouth as Aidan turned his head away and she crumpled into Peter's arms. It felt like we were walking my son to his execution. The mood was so somber. I've never had an opportunity to say hello, Jake said, interrupting the silence with a voice that sounded strangely upbeat, given the mood. Yeah, hi, Rob replied, barely even glancing at Jake. My muscles clenched at Jake's flushed red face and the hand he'd extended to shake as we walked awkwardly down the corridor, shoulder to shoulder. I think you were in one of my art classes, weren't you? The apple made of barbed wire. The corner of Jake's mouth turned up in a sarcastic smile. Yes, that's right. Yeah, that was my A-level project, and you gave me a C for it. Pretty stingy, if you ask me. That bastard scratched my arms to pieces. Well, it was a little clichéd, replied Jake, pushing his glasses further up his nose. Rob shook his head and said nothing. I pursed my lips together. I could understand why Jake would feel put out by the way I'd hugged Rob when he entered the room, but he had to understand how difficult this situation was. Bringing up events from years ago that didn't even matter was just petty. We need to take Aidan into the X-ray unit now, and I think it's best that just one person comes in with him, said Dr. Schaefer. I'll go, I said, stepping forward. Actually, I was thinking Mr. Hartley would be a good choice this time. We prefer to keep any harmful rays away from pregnant women, and it would be good for Aidan to spend some time with his father. Dr. Schaefer offered a small, half-apologetic smile. Is that okay, Em? Rob said. The familiarity of him calling me Em gave me a little jolt of surprise. Of course. I bent down lower to talk to Aidan. I'll be right out here waiting for you. Dad will be with you, though. You're going to do just fine. I couldn't stop talking to Aidan as if he was still 6. He was a teenager, I reminded myself. 16 years old. He could legally have sex. He could legally be a father and be married. The thought made me feel sick. He doesn't like to be touched, Rob. Stay close to him, though, all right? I want you to stay close to him so he knows he's loved. Rob nodded as he followed the doctor and my son through the double doors. I wanted to melt into the hospital floor. Come on, said Jake. We'll get a cup of tea and sit down. I wanted to shout at Jake for what he said to Rob, but instead I let him lead me away with his hand on the small of my back. Perhaps I was too tired to argue. Perhaps I needed someone to lead me, to tell me what to do. I didn't have the brain power to do it myself. All my thoughts were consumed by that blank expression on Aidan's face. Chapter 9. It would be easier to say that I was so focused on Aidan coming back and the things he had been through that I barely noticed Rob's reintroduction into my life. But that would be a lie. Rob's presence affected me more than I was willing to admit at the time. For one thing, seeing him brought me some comfort. At one time, Rob's resemblance to Aidan had brought me nothing but pain, and it was one of the reasons why he left in the first place. But now I looked at him and I saw what I hoped Aidan could still one day be. Confident, amiable, and overall, kind. Yes, Rob had gone through a rebellious phase, and no, he was not the kind of boyfriend you took home to your parents. But Rob had something of the artist in him. The rest was Viking. He had a hot temper and would have been at home with the fighting and fucking of that ancient society. But deep down, he had a sensitive nature and a strong sense of loyalty. He was a protective presence in my life. At least he had been, until Aiden disappeared. We saw Aiden in each other, and it drove us both mad. I felt like half a person after I thought Aiden had drowned in the flood, and I imagine Rob felt the same. We should have made each other whole by joining our broken selves together. But for whatever reason, it didn't work like that. We only reminded each other of what we had lost, and eventually we had to part. Couples who lose a child often separate. We were one of those couples. But now our child had come back. What did that mean for us? Those were the thoughts running through my mind as I waited with Jake, my husband, for Aiden's test to be finished. When Jake passed me a cup of wheat tea, I forced myself to stop thinking about Rob and concentrate on the man before me. The man whose daughter was in my womb, who had fixed me when I was broken rather than running away. He was the man I should be thinking about. He was the man who should make my heart skip a beat. I can't wait until all this is over and we can bring Aiden home, I said, sipping on my tea. I flinched as it burned my tongue and blew softly over the liquid. Jake had brought me to the hospital canteen. I felt guilty being so far from Aiden, but was glad to be away from those stark corridors. We sat at a wobbly table and watched as visitors bought cups of coffee for their elderly relatives. A woman desperately tried to soothe her screaming baby, red-faced from embarrassment. Is that wise? Jake crossed his legs and smoothed the fabric of his trousers. At least straight away, we don't know what kind of psychological harm Aiden has suffered. Are we really equipped to deal with it? I stared at Jake, unable to find the words I needed to convey how ridiculous I found that notion. I was his mother. I was all he needed. I must have been frowning or glaring because Jake stuttered as he attempted to explain further. What I mean is, Aiden is... Well, he's going to need a lot of specialist care, and we need to be careful that we give him what he requires to get better. There's a reason why he's still in shock and won't speak about what happened to him. Let's just not rush into things. Let's make sure we listen carefully to the experts. I mean, it might not even be safe to bring him home, especially as you'll be having the baby soon. You think Aiden is dangerous? I rubbed the back of my neck, trying to piece Jake's words together in my fogged state of exhaustion. He's not dangerous. Jake reached across the table and took my hand. Sweetheart, think for a minute. You haven't seen Aiden for a decade. A decade, Emma. He isn't the sweet six-year-old boy you remember. He's almost a fully grown man. We know nothing about him. Gently, I slid my hand out from his. Was there any truth in what he was saying? Could Aiden really be dangerous? When I saw him sitting there in the hospital, all I could think about was the boy in the red anorak who kissed me goodbye in the school car park. Maybe Jake was right. I didn't know him. Not anymore. Okay. We won't rush things, I said. But I really want Aiden to come home with us. He deserves to be part of a family. He's my son, Jake. He's my boy. I let him down and he's lived in hell for 10 years. I need to make sure he has a healthy, happy home now. And that means he's your son too, and you need to act like you're his father. Jake retracted his hand sharply and frowned. You don't think I'm acting like that already? I'm just trying to look out for him. Of course. You don't think I'm prepared to be a dad for him? I am, Emma. I am. His cheeks flushed and the volume of his voice started to rise, which surprised me because Jake was generally such a soft-spoken man. I mean, for God's sake, Emma, not many men would deal with this so well. Your teenage son just came back from the dead. As his agitation grew, I sat there with my mouth flapping open and shut. Everything was perfect. We have the baby on the way, the house is pristine, ready for the new arrival, you have your job, I had the promotion to the head of the art department. Everything was perfect. He lifted his glasses and rubbed his eyes. Hey. I stood, moved towards him and wrapped my arms around his shoulders. It's still going to be perfect. So our family is a bit bigger than we expected. That's okay, right? Aidan is going to make things even better. Bump has a big brother.
I rubbed Jake's shoulders, finally realising that this wasn't only a huge strain on me, but on him too. Of course it was. I couldn't begrudge Jake some adjustment time. Jake's hands spread up and over my arms, pulling them around his body so I was hugging him and he was clutching me tightly. As long as you're mine, I don't care about everything else. He kissed my hands. My belly pressed against the back of the chair and I felt Bump move again. The pressure of her small feet made me ache and I let out a moan of discomfort.
Seems like Bump would agree with you.
I laughed. I had to pull myself out of Jake's grip to move away. I barely caught the expression on his face as I went back to the other side of the table. He seemed to be half frowning and I longed to look into his mind to know what he was thinking. I imagined his thoughts as dark, terrifying and cold, isolated from the world, like a lonely boy bracing himself against the freezing cold wind on a snowy mountain top.
"How long is Rob staying in the village?"
he asked.
"He'll have to go back to the army soon, right?"
I eased myself back into my chair. "I don't know, he needs to get to know Aidan again, so however long it takes." Jake's fingers drummed the surface of the table.
"Do you think that's a good idea?"
"What do you mean?"
"Well, Aidan has been through hell for 10 years. Then he comes back, he gets to know his dad again, and then..."
He lifted his arms in the air in an over-exaggerated shrug. "He's gone, back to the army or whatever whim makes him leave again."
"Rob wouldn't leave on a whim."
"He did last time."
"That was..."
I frowned. Was it more than a whim? Rob had never expressed any desire to join the army before Aidan's disappearance. Before then, he bummed around, either working in his parents' B&B or taking up bricklaying work with local builders.
"What, different?"
"Yes, it was, because you had lost a son and he abandoned you when you were at your most vulnerable.
You know, sometimes I think you have a short memory because you've forgotten how bad it got."
"I haven't forgotten, trust me." I couldn't help it, my eyes dropped from his gaze and I tried not to think about that time. I stared hopelessly at my tea, wishing the memories away, wishing they'd slip into a black hole.
"I picked up those pieces, Emma."
"I know.
It's not something I regret. Having you in my life has been the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I mean it. I really do."
"But it's not just me anymore," I said. "I come with baggage. I come with a son who's back from the dead. That's just how my life is now." I felt a manic giggle rise up, threatening to spill out, but I've managed to keep myself under control. I glanced across at two elderly women stirring their tea. This wasn't the time or the place to lose it. He sighed and reached across the table to take my hands.
"I love you more than anything. You, the baby, and now Aidan are my family, and no one hurts my family."
Chapter 10. Aidan stepped out of the X-ray unit with the same blank expression as before. I didn't know what I'd been hoping for. Tears, a big silly grin, giggles. I glanced from him to Rob and saw his grim expression.
"How's my brave boy?"
I asked, hating the way my voice sounded, far too cheerful, far too forced, far too patronizing. I rubbed one hand with the other, alternating between the two, a nervous habit I'd picked up after Aidan disappeared. "He did very well," answered Dr. Schaefer. But when Rob couldn't meet my eyes, my stomach flipped over with nerves. There was a moment of silence as we stood in a crowd in the sterile hospital corridor. I hated this silence. I just wanted to hear my son speak, and though I was trying my best to remain patient, I could already feel the frustration bubbling up inside me like a pan simmering away. "We're taking him back to his room to get comfy, and then we'll have another chat," said the doctor, his overly calm tone inciting a creeping sense of dread to spread over my skin. After Aidan was settled into his room, Dr. Schaefer took us back into the corridor and explained the results of the X-ray in his matter-of-fact and professional doctor's voice. "The results confirmed what I expected. There's an old fracture line in the ankle at the lateral malleolus, but the break has healed well. I think he may have received treatment for it, in fact."
He was taken to a hospital, I asked.
It's difficult to tell without seeing the original injury. Aiden may have been treated privately by the person who took him. I wouldn't like to say for sure.
What does that mean for him in terms of the future? I asked.
He may experience some stiffness in his ankle. He might have a slight limp.
I pressed the heels of my hands into my eyes, trying not to think of Aiden trapped in some cage, chained like a dog in pain from the break in his ankle. Did he do it trying to escape? Did his kidnapper hurt him? Did the kidnapper give him any painkillers? I wanted to disconnect the traumatized boy in the hospital room from the little baby I gave birth to and nurtured, but I couldn't.
Was there anything else? I asked. Are there any more breaks?
Did he beat him? Was my little boy raped and beaten over and over again?
No, Dr. Schaefer said.
I know that doesn't sound like good news given the circumstances, but I really think it is. The ankle break seems to be the most significant evidence of injury.
So he wasn't beaten. At least not to the point of broken bones. That didn't rule out bruises. His kidnapper could still have pushed his thumbs into my son's tender flesh, hurting him until he screamed. That could still have happened. Let's not forget that. I was living in a reality where the news that my son only suffered one broken bone at the mercy of a sadistic kidnapper was good news.
Dr. Schaefer informed us that the child psychologist would be meeting with us after Aiden had a rest, before leaving us waiting outside the room in the corridor.
What happened in there, Rob? I asked, as soon as the doctor was out of hearing range.
Nothing, he said with a shrug. Absolutely nothing. Aiden didn't say a word. He didn't react. He sort of flinched a bit when they touched him, but there was nothing. No tears, no screams.
He clenched his jaw and pressed his fist against the wall of the corridor.
I can't fucking believe all this. Someone chained up my son and left him there with his ankle busted. Fucking...
A nurse walked past and raised her eyebrows at Rob. He was still pushing his knuckles against the wall.
I flashed her a quick smile and placed my hand on Rob's shoulder.
Hey, I said.
You can't lose it, not here. We're all dealing with this. Stay strong for Aiden.
Rob sighed and rested his forehead against the wall. He was always someone who reacted in big dramatic ways, though this time it didn't feel overdramatic. There wasn't an overdramatic way to deal with the events of the last 2 days.
Sorry,
I know. I rubbed his shoulder a little, trying to ignore the way Jake was watching me.
Small steps. We're here for Aiden. He'll come round, Rob, I know he will. He won't stay like this forever.
But after saying those words, I tried to swallow and my throat was bone dry. My eyes stung and I was tired all over. I was too exhausted to believe it. DCI Stevenson arrived at the hospital in the afternoon, wearing the stone-faced expression of a man carrying bad news.
The vultures are circling. Reporters have caught wind of the search going on through the woods. It's only a matter of time before they sniff out the witnesses' reports of seeing Aiden. We've told them not to talk to anyone, but these things always come out.
Did you find anything in the woods?
I didn't care about the press. I just wanted justice for Aiden.
Stevenson shook his head.
It was pouring down the night Aiden stumbled out onto the road. His tracks are gone. We've tried sniffer dogs using the clothes he was wearing, but they lost the trail pretty quickly. I've got a sizable force out combing the forest for clues. We will find something, but it might take longer than we'd hoped.
The fucking press, Jake muttered.
If they get hold of this, it'll be on every national newspaper.
It's going to be a nightmare. There's nothing you can do.
Stevenson shook his head. These stories always come out. Aiden's drowning was a big story 10 years ago. This is going to be even bigger. I know you've been put through hell and back over the last decade, and I hate to say this, but you need to brace yourselves. This is going to be tough. No one spoke for at least 30 seconds. I think we were all contemplating in our own ways how our world was going to change once the press caught on to the story of Aiden's reappearance.
It was probably our last day of having Aiden to ourselves without the media hounding us every hour of the day. We spent it sitting in his hospital room, staying close as he impassively allowed the doctors and nurses to prod and poke him. At one point I dared to hold his hand as they drew blood, forcing myself not to flinch as the needle pierced his skin. He had been through worse, and I hadn't been there to hold his hand during those horrific times. The child